I just want to make sure you can hear me okay now.
I can. However, I need to move momentarily. I am on a farm.
Oh.
In upstate New York, seeing my GGs, my horses, my babies, yearlings, weanlings. And
you're in a good place.
Oh, it's beautiful. It's there. Very, very near Saratoga Springs, and which is arguably the best racing, thoroughbred racing in the world. Other than the Breeders' Cup and the Dubai World Cup, it's the most fantastic place in the summer. So I'm a lucky guy. I've been touring, doing concerts all over the East Coast and the Midwest, and I'm coming west. I'm playing Talking Stick on this Friday. August 25th.
Darn glad you're coming west. It's been a while since we've seen you out here, David.
Yeah. Well, I was born and raised in Manhattan and in New Jersey right outside, and moved out to L.A. with my mom when I was 11. And spent my teenage years in L.A., which was really rocking, and played in a lot of bad blues boys bands and all kinds of stuff, but I've got an amazing band that's been with me now for almost a decade, and I've been all over the world, and I've been so fortunate to do what I love to do, and it's just more fun now than ever.
Well, that's good. What's different now than say, you know, when you were doing the Broadway stuff, and even
Broadway stuff. I was in Vegas for 6 years. I did over 2,000 shows. And
well, what's different now?
Well, it's really a celebration with me and my fans. And, you know, I was fortunate to become good friends in the last 5 years with David Jones, who recently passed. And got to know his first wife quite well, Linda, and his kids, you know, Ty. And they're just... David was a wonderful family man and a great dad, and he became a dear friend, and we were scheduled to do a show together, and sadly, he passed a couple weeks before we were going to do a show together, and we did four or five over the last 5 years, and really, we became buddies, and, you know, we had a lot of the same interests, including working in the theater and Broadway, and... I don't think people really appreciated how talented he was and what a great sense of humor he had and what a great big heart he had. And I now do a couple of songs that I dedicate to him. So a lot of Muck fans and people who have been fans of his and theirs, I think, will appreciate it. And I know his family and his kids and so forth really do. But you know, I play a lot of my hits, a lot of Partridge Family hits, and, you know, I think when artists, when they go out and they introduce a lot of new material, that's not why people have come to see them. You know, they forget that the reason they're there is because they've connected with your music and your songs and your hits, and it cheats the audience if you don't do them. And because I didn't play my hits for over a decade, because I was working on Broadway and doing that music, and then the West End, doing Blood Brothers with my brother Sean, and then going to Vegas, and I wrote a whole lot of new material for those specific shows I produced. And I've just had such an incredible, you know, diverse career, and... I always say this, you know, without your fans and without people who appreciate your music and what you do, no matter whether it's, you know, acting or producing, whether it's television, film, or theater, without your fans, you know, I'm pumping gas. And it's just been a real sort of love affair celebration for me and my fans. So I'm going to come and blow the roof off that place. Talking Stick on Friday.
The thing about your career, David, that it, you know, if for anybody that just pigeonholes you into the Partridge Family thing, is doing you such a disservice, because you've done so much more. The TV stuff, you had the Emmy nomination.
Yep.
Wasn't Betula Clark in Blood Brothers?
Oh yeah, Betula is, she's remarkable. I mean, remarkable. She's an amazing actress. You know, she did some movies that, I can't tell you how, here in America, people don't appreciate her. I mean, she's British and she lives in the UK. She's got a place in Miami, and when she comes down, I live in South Florida, although not in Miami Beach, but we get together, and she's an amazing cook. And, we became really, really great friends. And, she's got a remarkable voice. She's an incredibly loving and gifted person. And I just love her. And I appreciate how much support. And how, she's had a 50-year career, and she sings better now than she ever has.
Yeah, love her.
It's really great. And, you know, people forget how many hits she had, you know. Don't Sleep in the Subway and Downtown, and, you know, I could name like 10 of them probably, and you go, oh yeah. So I'm very fortunate to work with people that I have become friends with over the years. And, you know, I wrote with Brian Wilson, and I got to become quite good friends with John Lennon, and met all of them, but played with John a few times, and once played with Paul, who I saw last year. And, you know, those were the guys that when I was 13, I turned on the Ed Sullivan Show. Yeah. And, you know, the next day I went out and bought an electric guitar. So it's been, for me, John was really kind of a mentor to me, and a dear friend. And I love Yoko as well. She's an incredible artist herself. And, you know, as he always said, she really helped him and changed his life in many ways. And he adored her. So I've been very, very fortunate in my career to work with some of the best musicians, writers, artists. And, you know, Alice Cooper and I became friends back in the early 70s. And I know he lives in Scottsdale.
Oh, yeah.
And I got to meet he and his family back when I was playing in Vegas. He came and played in my charity golf tournament. I did the same for him. And I hope I get a chance, if he's not out of town, to see him and have him come to Talking Stick on Friday. So
he's a great guy.
It'd be cool to see some old buddies of mine that live there now.
We're getting everybody out there.
Yeah, let's go, baby.
We're getting the town out. I'm kidding. Talking Stick's not going to have room for everybody.
I hope that's so. Just come and celebrate it with us, and we'll just, seriously, it's more fun for me now than I've ever had. And my band are not only great players, but they're, you know, I don't hire musicians in places I go. They're like my second family, and they're amazing talents and are, you know, a big part of what I do. And you will see, it's the best band I've ever played with. So
you're bringing everybody in. You're not.
Oh, no. I bring everybody everywhere. And we're going to Europe. I'm going to the UK in November. Okay. I don't know if it's going to be the last time, but, you know, it becomes more and more difficult. I promised my son that I wouldn't leave for more than a couple of weeks, and he's now writing and recording, and what he's doing is truly incredible. His mom is a great singer, a great songwriter. She's written a lot of hits for, you know, Tina Turner and all kinds of artists that, you know, I have to say he's inherited a lot of her talent. So,
you know, I see Sean's name at the end of Blue Bloods, the TV show. Is that?
Oh, yeah. He's been writing and producing now for 15, 17 years, something like that. And, you know, he's got, I think, 27 children. which is truly remarkable. He's got 5 kids that are 7 and under.
Oh, my
5
God.
in his new family. And he has moved up where I used to live back in the 80s, up in the San Ynez Valley. And He's incredibly talented, and I think my dad, who was the consummate theatrical actor, and you know, he did over 40 Broadway shows. He instilled a real work ethic in all of us, and you know, it's been a great ride, and I'm really proud of my brothers, all of them. We're all very close, and it's been a wonderful thing for me and support, and also for my son. So I will have a chance because I'm playing San Diego on Saturday night, and then I'm going to go to L.A. and see my family, and that'll be awesome. My son's moving to L.A., but he's been writing, and I'm so excited for him. My daughter's also become a very successful actress, Katie. She's been in a lot of movies and television, and she's now in Vancouver doing a television series. So,
you guys are a dynasty.
Well, it's really wonderful when people recognize, you know, my stepmother won an Academy Award. My dad won a Tony, was nominated 3 times for Emmys. And, you know, my brothers are all respectively very, very talented. Patrick and I are the only two that are still acting and singing, but I think he's getting ready to do a tour of The Music Man with Shirley.
Wow.
My stepmom, Shirley Jones, who played my mom in the Parsons family. So people get rather confused about that. But she's Sean, Patrick, and Ryan's mom. And
Shirley's going out on a tour with the Music Man with Patrick?
Patrick playing the lead, and Shirley, who was in, obviously, the movie with Robert Preston, she's now playing the mother in that. And it's just really, it's great. I flew up to Sacramento where they were doing it sort of as a week-long showcase. But it was for me, I got the chills seeing them together, and seeing her on the stage playing that role was really amazing. She was originally Marion the Librarian.
Yeah, sure.
And as people remember, he's got a wonderful story, Patrick, because she was pregnant with Patrick, and they were trying to hide it. And on the bridge scene where they do that wonderful song and they hug and they have their first kiss, mm-hmm. Patrick kicked when she was about 8 months pregnant, and Patrick kicked Robert Preston. And he went, what in God's name was that? And she had to confess. So they were putting like bustles and bows and things over to try and hide it, because you know it took nearly a year to film the entire piece. But a classic movie, as is Oklahoma and Carousel, which she also did, and you know, she's the quintessential musical movie star who won an Academy Award for her performance in Elmer Gantry, playing quite the antithesis of what people know her as. And anyway, she's coming to see me in L.A., and I'm going to see her and Patrick and my nephews and nieces. And we're quite a clan, rather Irish. We all sing, and we celebrate that way. So anyway, it's going to be awesome for me. I am truly blessed and have so much to be grateful for.
You said that, you know, you appreciate it more now than you did. When you and Davey were talking, did you guys have a lot of notes to compare?
Of course. And because we both started in the theater, he in England, you know, he played the Artful Dodger in the original West End production of the not the movie, because by that time he was too old. Before he was in the Monkees, he did a lot of theater, and he was a fantastic performer, entertainer, and you know, kind of a throwback for me. You know, Bobby Darin to me had all of those tools, and he was an incredible writer, producer, and people don't realize how much he did in such a short period of time. But we also breed and race thoroughbreds, and he was into jump horses and steeplechase racing. I'm into flat racing, but we'd talk a lot about that. And he would call me, and he'd get these sort of like wild ideas about what we should do together. And I would go out and sing, you know, Daydream Believer, and I'm a believer. He'd come and sing, you know, like he'd open for me, and I'd come out at the end of his first act, and then he'd come out at the end of my act, and it was always really just real appreciation for one another and the struggles that he went through, you know, having the moniker of being a monkey really diminished people's, I think, appreciation for his talent. And I've talked extensively about what an amazing guy he was and what an incredible talent. So I'm going to do a couple of those great songs.
Didn't the Partridge Family really diminish what you can do?
Well, I think in a way, it certainly inhibited people from, when you become that famous and around the world for doing, you know, a light situation musical comedy, yeah. But the work that I've continued to do afterwards, it really created for me a drive and a commitment to trying to do things people had never seen me do. And I knew that I was a lot more, had a lot more breadth of talent and creativity that I wanted to try and share. And it became a very difficult uphill battle for the first 5-10 years. And, you know, it's just, if you create the opportunity yourself by writing and producing, you have a much better chance of people seeing you in a different light. And, you know, it's a great compliment that people say, "I didn't know you could do that. Wow, that was just so amazing or surprising that I didn't realize you could do that." And in a way, for me now, I just embrace the fact that people became aware of me, and the Partridge Family did more to, you know, help me, I guess, connect, bring light into people's lives, and, you know, bring them happiness as it is for me. It's really, it's a great gift to have people that you've touched and that you've had an impact on. And there's my dog. And she's obviously had an impact too.
What I'm appreciative of is not just the Partridge Family stuff, because it continues to bring people happiness, mm-hmm. and everything. And I know it had to be hard for you being in the middle of that hurricane. But then you go on to all the TV things and the Vegas thing. And the thing that blew me away was the production of Little Johnny Jones, that you would do a George M. Cohan.
Oh, God, that was the hardest thing I ever had to do.
Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, it was a revival that was started at the Goodspeed Opera House. And they were intending to take it to Broadway. We did amazing business. We opened in San Diego for a week, and then we did 6 weeks at the Dorothy Chandler Pavilion in L.A., and broke Evita's record for, you know, the house record. And it was painful for me because I was dancing with the greatest tap dancers, as Cohan was. And he was a true song and dance man. And I was not a tap dancer. You know, I'd been in musicals where I had to dance, but yeah. Tap dancing is very unique in itself. So I had to learn in a very short period of time, and it took me a while. A, you're competing with 8 minutes of a remarkable performance that, you know, that was in the movie. I think the movie's name is, I'm blanking on it, but James Cagney won an Academy Award for it.
Yankee Doodle Dandy.
Yankee Doodle Dandy. Thank you. And I had to sing Yankee Doodle Dandy, a 7.5-minute song and dance in front of 25 of the best tap dancers that were in, you know, every Broadway show. And a lot of them now are, you know, retired choreographers and directors and, you know, but it was an experience that challenged me in a way I don't think I'd ever been challenged. And I loved doing, because the music, I mean, give my regards to Broadway, is arguably one of the greatest pieces of music ever written for the theater. And it was just a, it was an amazing experience for me, and I learned a lot. I learned a lot about what I felt was really essential for me was to do something that I knew it would be the most difficult thing I'd ever done and taken on. And I knew that comparing me live on a stage to James Cagney's 4.5-5 minutes of being on film that they took months to do, but when he danced off the walls and, you know, he was, my dad considered him his father, literally. They were that close, and I got to know James Cagney, and he came and saw me in it and said, I want to tell you that what you did up there in 2.5 hours, I don't know that I could do that 8 times a week. And I said, well, maybe not at this age because he was in his 70s.
Yeah.
But he was a great, great man and an amazing talent. And he blew me away. You know, he was almost a part of our family, being Irish and being someone who loved the theater. And he loved my dad so much, and my father revered him. So being compared to him in that movie that he won the Academy Award for, and then Cohan himself, who is the theatrical legend. I mean, in Times Square, there's a statue of George M. Cohan. So it was daunting, but it was also incredibly, it was really fulfilling for me. And I did it for 6 months, and I had an opportunity to go and do a couple of movies for television, so I left it. And sadly, you know, it was truly an all-American patriotic film, a piece of theater that was, you know, paying due reverence to the movie and to Cagney and to George M. Cohan. But, you know, my heart and soul have been in really in rock and roll and blues and rhythm and blues. And, you know, my favorite artists were growing up were Beatles, Marvin Gaye. I love Jackie Wilson, and I loved a lot of them. I love Van Morrison. You know, it was a great era to be a teenager, and with the Stones and Dylan, and the Buffalo Springfield had played my high school.
No.
For, yeah. And Jim Morrison and the Doors played at the Whiskey, and John Densmore was the drummer, and his younger brother, Jim Densmore, and I were in the same grade in junior high. And I went to see the Doors before anybody knew them. It was an incredible time. I saw B.B. King a few times, and I saw Hendrix 4 times.
Yeah.
I was at the Santa Monica Civic when Cream did their live album, and one of the 2 nights, I don't know if I was there, was the infamous Crossroads, which is still the best live guitar playing I've ever heard in my life, and he's one of my guitar heroes. You know, I got to know Jimmy Page later, and he's an amazing player, and Jeff Beck as well.
You know, you've got to be the only guy that you can mention Petula Clark, Jimmy Page, Jimi Hendrix, the Doors, and James Cagney in
yeah,
one lifetime.
That's a pretty wide breadth of talent, I would say.
That cuts pretty wide path.
It's so, I mean, you know, Brian Wilson is a friend and someone I got to become good friends with Carl, and he married Gina Martin, who is Dean's daughter, and I got to know Dean as well, and, you know, sadly, Dino, who passed away in a tragic crash over the Pacific, and he was a jet fighter in the Air Force, and I went to school with he and also with Ricky, and, you know, I was blessed when I moved to L.A. to be in sort of the mecca of all of that great talent. And
David, didn't Bruce Johnston produce your version of
I was the first person actually had a hit all over the world. Carl Wilson and I sang I Write the Songs. Carl came in and sang the harmony part, and all the guys, you know, from the Beach Boys and the Modern Folk Quartet and America, both Jerry and Dewey came in and sang, and Bruce Johnson and I co-produced that, and I had a top five record with it all over the world, and RCA said, we don't think it's right for the American market, so Barry Manilow covered it, and, you know, I think it's one of his signature songs. He did a much more pop version. I think our version was a little more, less pop, less radio, and a lot more, I think, a lot deeper. But Barry's a huge talent himself.
Yeah, but when you hear that song in an elevator with Muzak, don't you hear your version?
Oh, man. I remember being, we cut live with 37 pieces at the big room at RCA, and Harry Nilsson was there. He came and sang, and we wrote a song together, he and I, and Harry was brilliant himself. Mm. And unfortunately, extremely self-destructive, but had a wit and what a talent as a writer. Oh. He wrote actually a couple songs for the Monkees, and I think Cuddly Toy.
Cuddly
he
Toy
wrote,
was one, yeah.
I think he wrote a couple of tunes that they cut, as I recall, that Davey sang.
Can't remember the other one, but I sure remember Cuddly Toy.
Yeah, no, of course. Anyway, come and all. I'll take requests. Not really. But I do every show that I do, I have no set pattern, which makes it like the first time you do anything, because every audience is different. I mean, people ask me, what is it like now compared to the way it was? Well, I don't know. They still scream and shout and, you know, go sort of wacky, but their voices have dropped an octave, you know. Other than that,
and you're a little more grounded.
I would say a lot more. And I'm not working 5 days a week on a television show and then, you know, 12-13 hours a day doing that and then going into the recording studio at night. But
I never knew how you did the TV show, you did the recording, and then you would go out on the weekends and tour.
Right.
I don't know how anybody could physically do that.
Well, I was exhausted, and I was burned by the end of 5 years of doing it, and I loved it, and, you know, I was, again, I was a workaholic, and my father, again, instilled that work ethic in me, and I had a contract. Fortunately, unlike Davey or Mickey and the Monkees, the Partridge family never went out on tour. They couldn't sing or play. And it was on the back of all the albums, and it was very clear. I got to work with the Wrecking Crew, who were Hal Blaine,
Danny Lou Tedesco,
Shelton, Larry Carlton,
yep.
Some of the greatest musicians of all time, Joe Osborne, Max Bennett. I mean, these are jazz legends, and Mike Melvoin,
Have you seen the Wrecking Crew film?
Yes.
Unbelievable.
And they asked me if I would come and do it, and I said I would love to sit down and do it and pay homage to them, because they taught me so much. And, you know, Jerry Goffin from Goffin and King, Jerry Goffin, Carole King, Jerry wrote a song for me that was a big hit, I'll Meet You Halfway, and it was such, for me, I was such a fan of the writers from the Brill Building, which were Barry Mann, Cynthia Weil, Goffin and King, and Sadaka and Greenfield, and those guys were writing hits daily, you know, be it on Broadway, which is one of the classic, you know, the Drifters cut a lot of them. But you know, Barry's have been a friend of mine for years and years, and I learned so much from all the writers I got to work with and the musicians. I mean, sitting with Louis Shelton and Larry Carlton playing blues, playing jazz, and I couldn't play jazz. I was just like, you know, I was dumb as a stump when it came to that. But no, I learned so much from them. It was an education. I started when I was 19. You couldn't, if you had $10 million. You couldn't have them in the studio for 5 years. You know, we'd cut three tracks a night, and we cut it all live. I'd sing live, sometimes play live and sing, and it was such an education. I'm so grateful to them for what they've done for me and what they taught me, and I became like a sponge. I would just every night after working all day on the set, but it was so exciting for me to drive over the hill from Burbank to the studios at Western and Olympic, they were called. It's all different. It's Ocean Way. But we had a live echo chamber that was so unique. I think it was the best studio other than Capitol and maybe RCA. But I got to work with so many great musicians and writers.
The amalgamation of everything, everybody you know, all the experiences come to play at Talking Stick.
It will all come to play, and we will all come to play. And I haven't been there for a long, long time. I've never played Talking Stick, but I'm
nice place.
I promise you, we will, whatever I got in my body and in my brain, I'll just I'll come to celebrate it with y'all. And
they're going to treat
know
you.
How much I appreciate spending time on the radio with you and talking about it. I'm going to call Alice and see if he's around. And
you should.
Maybe get together with him, and hopefully he'll come, and he and his wife and his family will come, I hope.
One more thing I wanted to ask you about, and that is your continued involvement in the fight against Alzheimer's.
Yeah, well, I've been asked, and, you know, probably more appreciative of that. My mom has been, she has severe dementia, and she's been in 24-hour nursing care. I'm her only living relative, and obviously her only son, and it's very painful to watch someone disappear, and we are now going to be experiencing an epidemic because the largest percentage of our population are baby boomers, almost 88 million, and I don't want my children, my son, my daughter, or yours, or anyone else's to have to go through what I've had to go through, and the Alzheimer's Foundation of America is a nonprofit that has 24 hours a day live individuals who are counselors, psychologists, social workers who can help and assist their anyone. It used to be they'd call it senility, and it was sort of there was shame involved in it, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, there's crazy Uncle Willie, you know. But in truth, we didn't know a lot about it, and there was something like, there's something wrong with you or your family, and it's not the case. We've done so much in terms of what's happened in the field of medical and creating opportunities for us to live a lot longer from the neck down. But the brain itself is something that we're learning more and more about, but there is no cure for it. There are certain different approaches and different philosophies on how to retard the disease. But Alzheimer's and dementia are the eldest baby boomers are at retirement age of 65 in 2011. What that means is we're going to be facing this for the next 20 years. And as we're living longer, the odds of people having dementia or Alzheimer's related, it's going to be something that we need to have more facilities, we need to have caregivers, and people who have it who are alone, they need a companion. It's essential. So for anybody out there who has a neighbor or a friend or a family member, someone you know, call the Alzheimer's Foundation of America in New York. And someone will be there to assist you. They're building 11 from charity donations. I'm going to do some PSAs for them, public service announcements, and I'm going to go around and speak on behalf of that organization and all the organizations underneath that umbrella. You know, the President of the United States has become very, very proactive, and we need our government to come and be more proactive as We spend less time in other countries. We need to spend more time in our country assisting people who need it. And I'm so honored that they asked me to be the face of Alzheimer's Foundation of America. And I consider it, you know, probably the most important thing I've ever done in my life.
It is tremendous. Would you consider Glenn Campbell coming out about it and Bobby V's recently announcement also
yes,
a help?
Yes, I think anyone who brings awareness, which is the first thing, education and awareness, and it's not anything to be ashamed of. It's not anything that people need to hide. Oftentimes, with people who have the beginning stages of it, the family members want to protect them, and they try and hide it. And there's nothing to be ashamed of. It's something that we need to address now, because it's going to get to a point where it's going to touch everyone in their families. And I just hope that all of our children and grandchildren don't have to face the experience. So God bless you all, and thank you so much, Steve. You're awesome, and I've really appreciated talking to you about everything. And
it's been fun.
It's been more than that.
You know what?
Me.
I don't have any list of questions. I just want to sit down and talk with somebody.
Yeah, well, that's what you and I just did, and for me, it's really refreshing and unique, unusual, and extremely charitable on your part, and I can't tell you how much it means to me.
I appreciate it.
No, for me to be able to just sit down and talk with you about everything in life, you know.
Whatever you want, lay it on
the
line.
Yeah, man. Well, it's so unique now because, obviously, radio itself has become so corporate-driven, and, you know, I appreciate it more than you will ever possibly know.
Buddy, it's all good.
All good, man. I look forward to seeing you at Talking Stick on Friday night.
Friday night, going to be a great show. A lot of fans, a lot of family, a lot of fun, and
continued
success and health, and get back to the horses.
God bless.
Thanks, buddy.
Have a great day.
You too, man.
Okay, buddy. Bye.